Hi, this is Tim. This podcast is brought to you by Matt Talley and Wendy Muller. That's right. They are the producers of this show this week, last week, the week before, and I'm assuming the following week.
Two Faces Radio.
One of the programs which you hear daily on many of these mutual stations begins like this.
Swallow my cockuccino.
Scene 8, take 1.
Knock it off!
There's only one return, okay? And it ain't of the king, it's of the Jedi.
Shit out here watched Empire and Jedi last week, and ever since he's been trying to do the Jedi mind trick. Crazy fuck thinks he levitates shit with his thoughts. Knock it off!
There's only one trilogy, you fucking morons.
The Force is strong with this one.
Dude, don't encourage him.
Those fucking Hobbit movies were boring as hell. All it was a bunch of people walking. Three movies of people walking to a fucking volcano.
Fuck Jay and Silent Bob. Fuck them up their stupid asses.
Who the fuck said that shit?
He calls himself Magnolia Fan.
Silent Bob's an electrical genius. He won the science fair in 8th grade by turning his mom's vibrator into a CD player using some chicken wire and shit. Motherfuckers like MacGyver. No, motherfuckers better than MacGyver. Knock it off.
Jay and Silent Bob are one-note jokes that only stoners laugh at. They're fucking clown shoes.
You gotta give the driver a little incentive. Like how? Like this.
Yeah, but what happens when they pick you up and you don't make with the head? Don't they kick your ass to the curb?
Sure, if you don't make with the head.
Who could it be?
Hey, if it'll get me a couple hundred miles across the country, I'll take a shot in the mount.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a delivery man, and I have some cream for you.
Wow, that cream looks heavy. You must be strong.
I work out.
You suck that guy's dick?
Yeah, how do you think I knew that he...
Wait, but you said you only had sex with 3 different guys. You never mentioned him.
Because I never had sex with him.
You sucked his dick.
So, do you want me to give you your cream now?
I've been waiting for it all day.
Dante!
How many dicks have you sucked? How many?
All right, shut up a second and I'll tell you. Jesus, I didn't freak out like this when you told me how many girls you fucked.
This is different. This is important. How many?
Fuck. I spilled my cream. Do you mind?
I don't mind, especially if you spill it on my face.
I give you the Buddy Christ.
Let us fuck.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 116 of Radio Labyrinth. My name is Tim Andrews. There's Jeff Leboff.
Howdy.
And Stephanie is in Detroit stuffing her face with all sorts of delicious foods that
she's... You see that stromboli she sent?
Oh, that pizza?
She says yeah. It's a pizza, but it's a fucking stromboli.
It's a stromboli, but she's been eating all sorts of fun fucking, like, just shit everywhere, just delicious food, so she's going to waddle back into town soon.
She sent me the picture of her Boston cooler that she had with some booze in it.
Yeah. So. Autumn's not with us tonight. She did send us her... Episode 2 recap of Hate Watching The Walking Dead, so that'll be later on in the show.
Oh, she recorded it? Cool.
Yeah, she recorded it. I'll tag it at the end. Fucking Ira is on some mystery island. Can't really discuss it. Hopefully he'll come back and tell
us
about
Survivor
it.
Or something.
Is he really?
Naked and Afraid.
Yeah, Naked and Afraid. I'd be afraid if I were Ira and I were naked. And joining us this week, though, one of our favorite radios, one of our supporters since the beginning, we have the one and only, introduce yourself.
Dustin Lawler.
Dustin Lawler. Come on, everybody clap. All right.
Yeah, I figured you were going to introduce me as, and last but not least, Dustin Lawler.
No, but Caitlyn Jenner did when she read the Patreons.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In honor of International Women's Day,
yes.
Caitlyn came in. She flew all the way to Atlanta, and she came up here to the studio. And, of course, she's always hitting on me, but, you know, sweet rack. Dustin, thanks for coming in. Now, we're on this episode, we're going to talk primarily and pretty much exclusively about Kevin Smith and Kevin Smith movies and his contributions beyond movies, which would be the internet, the podcasting world, and also the fact that last week he had a massive heart attack. And we're all, I'm assuming, the same age. How old are you, Dustin?
I was born in 75, so I'm 43 this year.
So you're 43. We're all in our 40s. Jeff will turn 50 soon, ahead of all of us.
No way.
But the reason Kevin Smith, I think, appeals to our generation, you know, the big indie film that came out when did Clerks come out? 95, 96?
Yeah.
Came, yeah. 94, 94 in Sundance and then rolled out.
The first Gen X director, the first Gen X indie producer or director, all that came out and really grabbed the Gen X kids because we were in our 20s. And wow, hey, this somebody's finally making a movie with us. And
working at video stores.
Working at video stores, working at convenience stores. Mm-hmm. He really came at the right time, got caught up in the zeitgeist, and continued to make films. And the thing that I like about Kevin Smith is, you know, he's not regarded as one of the best directors in history.
True.
But he is a good director for what he makes.
He's a great writer.
Right.
And that's what really
that's
set him apart.
Great writer.
Yeah, he could write and did do a lot of rewrites when he first got into Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
That was his thing. You know, the big thing was the Superman movie that he never made.
The one that you can see, it was the Tim Burton was going to direct it, right?
Tim Burton did end up getting it, and that's what ended up booting him out of it because Tim.
So he wrote the treatment, and then
Tim was like, "Okay, I'll do the film. Right. I'm gonna write my own."
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where Nicolas Cage comes in.
Yeah.
And you can see this on YouTube, that ridiculous suit and mm-hmm. Superman with the long hair.
It looked like they pushed him in the suit.
Yeah.
You know, it was just so tight.
Yeah.
And he's just standing there looking at himself. You know. Nicolas Cage, I'm sure, does.
Well, I'm so glad that movie never got made.
Yeah, me too.
I like Superman, but as far as the DC world is concerned, I gravitate mostly toward Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the other, I like Green Lantern. And
I like The Flash.
I don't watch any of those shows, though. I'm not immersed in the DC universe.
Yeah, they've done a really good job. I haven't kept up with their most recent season, but the story, the way they let it unfold, I mean, he's an awesome Flash. I mean, what's his name?
The dude that plays Flash?
Yeah.
I forget what his name is.
Jeff will look it up.
Yeah.
But to me, there hasn't been a good Flash since the Incredible Hulk with Lou Ferrigno, and they had the Flash with the puffy suit.
Yeah. Well, and then they had the Flash in the mid-90s, early 90s.
Yep.
And he ends up, he's playing the Flash's
Grant.
Father.
Grant Gustin. Yeah, the dude that was the Flash and the old one.
That was a spinoff from the Incredible Hulk.
Right.
Right.
Yep. That was like the last thing that Bill Bixby did before he died was the Live Is Elvis Alive, the two-part show.
All right.
Yeah.
About as successful as the Al Capone vault.
It was.
Near the,
it, but we in, all watched it. Decade. I mean, I remember, got to watch this Elvis thing. And then he got pranked by Captain Jenks from the Howard Stern Show. All right. So, Dustin, tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you, where are you from?
Originally from East Tennessee,
okay.
From Knoxville.
Knoxville. Beautiful town.
It is. World's Fair, 82.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That was the big thing. And I was
sort of
seven.
The university is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, UT.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's there. So I grew up there, moved to Georgia in 91, 90 for high school. I moved to the middle of high school. I was one of those.
That's got to suck.
Yeah, well, and it was 2 week notice, too. So it was, and in the summer.
So,
I have all these friends turned 16 and, or, 15 turning 16, and I don't come back to school. You know, there's no internet.
Oh, right in that era when you're best friends with people.
I mean, friends you've been growing up with since kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
you know, going to church with and, you know, you basically lived your life with these people and then all of a sudden you're gone.
Right.
You know, and you're moving to a new town. Now, it was moving to a new town, so I got to be somebody different.
The new kid.
Yeah. And
did you reinvent yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I put on a leather jacket, you know, put my hair, you know, combed my hair a different way, colored it.
You're Christian Slater and Heathers, right?
Actually, you have no idea.
What?
Yeah, very much so.
God, Veronica Drool much?
I came here and I wasn't in town probably 2 years and joined a band.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I did with any of my time from then to what, 2002.
What instrument did you play?
Guitar. Mm-hmm. I was a front guy, so I sang as well.
You still do that?
No. I don't.
Could you still play guitar?
Yeah,
like, get it out. All right.
Oh yeah, I still play.
Get on the porch like Andy Griffith.
Yeah.
Your brother's in the band though, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He's the guitarist for St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Are you kidding me?
No. That's my brother, Broen.
I love the fact that the lead singer of that band is like a bank clerk with the best voice in the history of the world.
He was an accountant that grew up Episcopal.
Really?
Or Lutheran, I'm sorry.
Lutheran, okay.
And so he was trained his whole life to be a minister. And
wow.
He just did a flip. He just decided, this is what I want to do. And so in doing that, he really, he's the only person I've ever seen that can really bring out like an Al Green
type
voice. And when you see him, it's you can't believe that voice is coming out of that guy. But he, you know, my brother played. Actually, my brother started with Jason Isbell. He was Isbell's guitarist.
Jason Isbell is awesome.
Yeah. He's my brother, Broen Lawler. He was the original guitar player in Jason Isbell in the 400 unit. He was the original 400 unit guitarist. He also did the artwork for the first three albums that he was on. And he's very, you know, my brother also paints and does art. And so he's got all this. these things going on, and it's great. I get to vicariously live the music life that I didn't get to have through him.
That's pretty fucking cool, man.
It's kind of cool. You never know where he's going to be. You know, if he's going to pop up. This last week, they were just recording their new album in L.A.
Hang on a second.
Sure.
No, I want you can keep talking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and he's, you know, it's odd to have a soul band of a bunch of young white guys from Birmingham.
Right.
You know.
This guy looks like a banker, I swear to God, or Episcopalian minister.
He was an accountant for you.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, that's what he did.
Nice.
Yeah, and until the day that he decided to do this.
Listen to this voice, Jeff, if you've never heard of them. Have you heard him?
A little bit, yeah.
Here we go. This is a white guy.
Why did it get so dark?
And that's your brother playing guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Hey!
I'm going to listen to them on the way home. Guys, if you've never heard of St. Paul and the Broken Bones, go to YouTube, type in St. Paul and the Broken Bones, live and breathing, and check out the song Don't Mean a Thing. Great video. Anyway,
he's got a little Stephen Page vibe.
He looks like Stephen Page, yeah. Kind of looks like Corky, too. Anyway, so that wasn't very nice, was it?
Oh, just saying. No, you ought to hear him.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Those guys have the greatest sense of humor. I mean, my brother, if he's with them for any amount of time, they've got the same sense of humor that we do.
Well,
so
the thing is, I never heard of this band, but at Mary Todd, the barbershop where I work down in Cabbage Town, they have this playing in the background sometimes, you know, the Live and Breathing channel on YouTube. And, you know, it's just all indie artists, you know.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. So I really got into these dudes. And so that's a cool coincidence.
Yeah, that's great. They opened for the Stones here in town when the Stones played.
They opened for the Rolling Stones.
When they were here.
Did your brother meet him?
Oh, yeah.
Did he meet the Stones?
Yeah, they met the Stones. They actually took photos, but also signed
we go to me, Keith.
You can't show this to anybody. And they had to sign it. They couldn't put it on the internet.
They couldn't show a picture?
Of them with the band.
Why not?
I think it's because they're all five.
Oh.
Yeah.
They're short dudes.
They're midget little English people.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's scary when you see them. You see them in juxtapose with, you know, I know how tall my brother is.
Right,
and you look at them and they're all like shoulder high.
Oh, man.
Across the board.
That's pretty cool. You would think that Mick Jagger now looks like Don Knotts in the waning years of his life.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. But I bet he probably carries a bullet in his front pocket, too.
Nip in the bud. We'll talk about your brother more some other time.
Definitely. But the music thing's what got me into actually listening to Kevin. Because at the time, the band I was in, we were playing and recording, and Kevin had just made Clerks. I was working in a video store in my off time. And so I saw Clerks, really liked it.
Did you start acting like Randall after that?
No, I didn't act like any of them, but I thought it was really cool the way they talked.
Yeah.
I was like, that's dialogue that I hear on a daily basis, but never on a film. You know, and just like Kevin, when he first saw the movie in a theater,
right.
It scared him to death.
Why did it scare him?
Because all the cursing.
Oh, yeah. Well, there is a lot of cursing.
He almost crawled under the seat. He was like, this is ridiculous.
That's how we spoke.
Yeah. And it's and it also looks back and you're like, that's how we spoke.
Right.
You know?
That's why I like that movie so much. I never even really got into it. Jeff turned me on to it. He said, you got to watch this movie. And I don't think we were living in the same town, but so I went and rented it, and it just floored me, the dialogue.
Yeah.
A movie that is dialogue driven, and the talking and the talking and the talking, but not so much that you'd quit paying attention.
Yeah, well, that's what kept your attention was the little tidbits, the Star Wars references.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing. He was one of the first directors to really start, or writers, to start putting in references to pop culture so prevalently,
right?
And now it's
unavoidable in anything.
Yeah, it is
to the point where it's annoying as shit.
And at the same time, people, you know, you try to say, well, that's, you know, I wouldn't try to say that's a Kevin Smith thing that he started or made, but he definitely helped it along.
He helped kick it off.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And Animaniacs around the same time as well. Go ahead.
Which is coming back, I think.
Yeah, I was reading Film Threat, and that's how I knew about Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Before Clerks came out, and then when Clerks came out, I was reading about it, but I didn't see it in the theater or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I lived on an island, and we had one video store. So I went to the video store one day, and it was like in the new releases was Clerks. I'm like, oh, shit, I'm going to check this out, because I had heard of it from Film Threat. I brought it home, watched it, then immediately went and rounded up as many people as I could find, and we watched it again. And then those people went and found more people, and we watched it again. The only time I watched a movie three times in a row.
Until recently.
Until a few times Stupid Gesture came out. Yeah.
Jeff told me about it, and I went to the video store, and at the time I was living in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I was going to grad school, which I quit and started working at Bob Evans as a manager just for some money. So I didn't have a VCR. I would go rent a VCR, and I got Clerks, and I'm going to watch this. So I bring it home, and I plug the VCR in. I notice there's a tape in there, so I push play on it, and it's a Nicky Dyle movie.
Nice.
So after I jacked off, I took that out, and I put Clerks in and watched it, and then I watched it again.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable. And then I went and got this. That's all I did. I lived alone. I didn't have any friends down there, so I just rented movies constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So I would watch that, and then I would watch The Stand. I watched The Stand over and over again.
All six videotapes?
Yeah, the whole thing.
M-O-O-N.
But anyway, go ahead, Jeff.
And then I didn't see Mallrats in the theater, but I saw that on video. Mm-hmm. And then Chasing Amy I saw in the theater.
Oh, we saw that in the theater.
Yeah.
You had moved to Atlanta by then.
Now, Mallrats was the first one I saw fresh. Like,
right.
Clerks had been out. Mm-hmm. It made it to our Blockbuster Sundance rack. Mm-hmm. At the time when it came out. And so that was my experience with it. And I liked it, watched it a few times. But when Mallrats came out, and I was like, ooh, this is the same guy. It's a sophomore effort.
Right.
There's more money, real money behind it.
Yep.
Let's see what happens. And I really enjoyed it.
A lot of people don't like it. I love it. I think it's very funny.
In retrospect, I like it a lot more than I did at first.
But you can tell it was a studio movie.
Right. Yeah.
And you can tell the studio hacked it to pieces.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Now, my favorite cut of Mallrats is the full cut, the one with the original beginning.
Right.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, it actually, it starts out at the governor's ball. Mm-hmm. And so all the references for that come up about the governor's ball and what happened the night before that are just kind of thrown away in the movie make sense.
Mm.
And so a lot of those things that you watch over and over and you're like, these are plot holes.
Yeah.
They're not plot holes. They're just missing the scenes from before. And so it makes it more of a rounder movie, fleshes everybody out.
Was it a Miramax movie?
No, it was Universal.
Universal, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to trigger anybody by talking about Weinstein.
No, well, I mean, it's unavoidable with Kevin. I mean, yeah. Weinstein's the reason that he is who he is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all
and Ben
started.
Affleck and Matt Damon.
Right. I mean,
Kevin was the first one to jump off the Weinstein boat, though, before any of the accusations or anything. In his book, Tough Shit,
mm-hmm.
he really takes Harvey to task.
About that stuff?
Oh, about the everything, like Clerks 2 and how Harvey like dissed him and at the screening and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harvey was the driving force behind Kevin and is also the to get him started. And then the driving force behind Kevin to make Kevin who he is now.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Kevin's not the same person that he was when he made Clerks.
Right.
He'll say, age is one thing. But when you, like him, he became a stoner at 38.
Yeah.
Now, you would assume by watching all of his movies that, he was a stoner. And I'm sure, he'd smoked here or there, but not like he does now. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Before his heart
attack. Before the heart attack.
Right? Now he's eating edibles, I'm sure.
I'm sure he's still doing something.
Did you listen to the Ralph report?
I missed the Ralph report, but I did. I was trying to.
Ralph put those two episodes with Kevin out for free, which was nice because usually you got to be a Patreon to
now
get who the is
Ralph report.
Who, what
Ralph,
is the
Ralph Garman?
Who is Ralph Garman?
When Kevin started his podcast network, which he was one of the first to start a network of podcasts.
Yeah,
I mean, one of the first five anyway. And those first few shows were Smodcast, which is him and Scott Mosier as producer. That's the backbone of the network. Then there was Ralph Garman, who was a L.A. DJ for K-Rock.
Okay.
And he and Kevin always got together when he was on air and, kind of shot the shit over pop culture. And Kevin and Bean didn't like that, you know, so they said,
you'd like Garmin if you got into him, because he's an impression guy.
You got to pay to listen to his show.
You don't have to pay to listen to Hollywood Babylon.
All right, you can
now
listen
to
Hollywood Babylon.
That's Kevin and Ralph's podcast is Hollywood Babylon. It was one on the Smodcast Network. All the Smodcast Network stuff is free.
Now, Hollywood Babylon, is that talking about old Hollywood and
no, they just talk about everything, Hollywood.
Hollywood
because
general.
That's a book.
Yeah.
I forget the guy's name. It's Anger, and somehow that guy was involved in the Manson scandal. But
they had a play on words.
Okay, yeah.
So it's Hollywood Babble.
Oh, all right.
Dash
yeah.
on.
Okay,
okay. Yeah. And
well, here's this clip that Jeff sent me from the Ralph Garman. And I hope we don't get in trouble for playing it, but Kevin's talking about the heart attack, and this is from episode one, and this is the first clip.
Plato said the unexamined life is not worth living. That's my whole leitmotif in life. All I do is examine life. Like right. Even after the heart attack, like I talk things through. Like, I got on social media and was like, hey, here's what happened, and blah, blah, blah. That's my way of dealing with everything. Good or bad is to share it. I'm an oversharer or whatever fuck.
This week's TV before it was PC features Go Go Gophers. You might not remember this cartoon, but it was on a lot when I was a kid in the 1970s. It is a 1960s, the late 1960s, cartoon set in the West. Now, you're thinking, well, it's in the Wild West. It's going to be cowboys and Indians, right? Well, you're right, but it's actually the cavalry and Native Americans. But the Native Americans are gophers. This will come from Wikipedia. The series is set in the 19th century as well as the early 20th century in the American West. You got a couple of coyotes. Now, the coyotes represent the United States Army, the Bluecoats, okay? Colonel Kit Coyote, the short one with the glasses, the leader, is supposed to be Teddy Roosevelt. And his right-hand man, Sergeant Okihoma, is supposed to be John Wayne. They're trying to make sure that Gopher Gulch is secure. And the way they're doing it is they're wiping out the two surviving gopher Indians, depicted as anthropomorphic gophers. Sounds real PC, doesn't it? That would be running board and ruffled feathers. However, these gophers proved to be very clever and always managed to foil the plans of Colonel Coyote and Sergeant Okihoma. Whenever they came up with an idea to stop their adversaries, ruffled feathers would break into gibberish. And as he tried to explain it, no one would understand, so running board has to come in and describe what he's saying. And you do yourself a favor, if you're interested in this, go to YouTube, check out, type in Go Go Gophers. That's GOGOGOPHERS. Go Go Gophers, watch them go. It entertained me when I was a little kid. It's a little cringy now. But here you go.
What you do? Paint him picture?
Colonel.
You play him joke on Colonel?
Treasure.
Oh, him think him treasure map, then him get fooled. Whoopie doopie, you am genius.
Brains, Sergeant, brains. If we want to catch those Indians, we'll just have to use our heads.
That's sure enough using your head.
Look, Sergeant, there's Indian writing on this rock. It's a map.
Go, go, gophers, watch them go, go, go.
Two little Indians, no others near.
Colonel, he vows these two soon disappear. Fighting the army, blue soldiers galore.
What can two Indians do?
Go, go, gophers, watch them go, go.
I'm an oversharer about certain things, but I try not to be too much anymore because social media now is a vast wasteland of a million different ideas and people complaining about everything.
Yeah, it used to be more of a forge your own way instead of looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, and that's a great way of putting it.
And now it's that. I mean, you can forge your own way if you want, but there's plenty of other sharks out there that are doing the same thing and going to come at you for any number of reasons, whether it's your identity, your content. Mm-hmm. I mean,
look what happened to him last week. Okay, yeah. Chris Pratt. Thoughts and prayers are going out for you. I sang a prayer for you, Kevin Smith. I don't know you, blah blah blah. Then he gets attacked.
Right.
It's bullshit.
And it was, you know, and Autumn had it right last week. You know, it's those people that, you know, if they'd been in the room, they wouldn't have said that.
Right.
But, you know, it's those people that are, you know, the couch atheists.
Yeah.
You know, internet atheists that just will shoot down anything just because the word prayer's in it.
Yeah.
Oh, please. God, thoughts and prayers.
How about Autumn kind of gave Kevin shit for getting on Facebook Live or just sharing a picture from his hospital bed.
But that's him. He's always been that way.
That's what I'm saying. He's like, look, I can sit here and make a million phone calls and call everybody and tell them, hey, I'm okay. You know, I'm alive. Or he's like, I can use social media for what it's meant to be used for, to contact everybody all at once and tell them, hey, I'm alive, I'm okay.
Right.
This is it.
Bringing it back around to what we were talking about at the top of the show about Kevin Smith being our generation. Mm-hmm. Here's our generation having a heart attack. Here's our generation reaching middle age.
Yeah.
And right. You see that, and I get scared. Because now, celebrities die all the time. People that we've known for years and years. David Bowie died.
Yeah, last couple of years.
And these people that we grew up with, but they're all older than us.
Yeah.
And now a guy like Kevin Smith, boom, heart attack. You're like, shit.
Yeah. It really gives us some cause for self-reflection.
Absolutely.
You know.
And I'm sitting here thinking, God, I got to quit smoking cigarettes. I got to do this. But that whole thing of just smacking in the face of somebody that you know, that you basically, everybody thinks they're friends with Kevin Smith.
Right.
Right.
And he's made his career that way. That guys, mostly guys, I would assume. Guys like us.
I
know there's a lot of female
fans.
There are,
even more so in this new generation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm saying that people that, early adapters of Kevin Smith.
Sure.
Guys, mm-hmm. nerdy dudes, or guys who are into pop culture, more so than the now, because now pop culture is mainstream, and nerd culture is mainstream. So, in fact, to kind of be, I don't know, to be subversive and all that, you have to not pay attention to pop culture because they shove it down your throat so much. But my point is that, again, to see a guy who's your age that's famous have a heart attack like that, he's like, fuck, I gotta take a pause.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I want to live a little bit longer.
Yeah, I'm the night it happened, and this sounds planned or made up, but I've had panic attacks in my life.
Oh, so have I.
For you know, and I had them for a couple of years. I haven't had one in almost 2 years. That Sunday night, about 12 o'clock, mm-hmm. I woke straight up out of bed, panic attack, walked around the house, didn't even grab my phone, mm-hmm. you know, take my mind off of it, just tried to calm down, went back to bed. Thought that was odd. Got up the next morning, all that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird. It was like, it not only, and I'm not saying, oh, I felt what he felt. It was more of a, you know, was I going through what? I mean, I'm not the greatest health in the world. I've not looked after it like, you know, you should, as most people who are 40 and think they're still 20.
Mm-hmm. We all do.
Yeah. You kind of put that on the back burner.
Everything is so archived that the 90s might as well have been last week.
Yeah.
But I think that's every generation that you think back. Oh, you know, I did this. Oh, I did this a year ago. Oh, no, you did it 10 years ago.
I did that 20 years ago.
I did
ago.
It 20 years. The 90s are so far away.
Yeah. It's like, it seems like it was yesterday, but then when you really think about it, it's like thinking back on a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that I could just, it's right there. But
when I saw when I saw it on Twitter, my heart sank.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just right down into my guts. I'm like, oh, shit.
I just thought, great, this is how this year's going to go.
Yeah.
And it's not so much this year. It's, you know, knock on for Micah. It's been
some of it's wood.
Yeah, there's a little bit. It's been a little better this year. It's not been so, you know, in your face. But as we get older and the people that were popular are in social media, you're going to see more character actor, B actors, people that you would have forgotten about until you saw them again 40 years later in a movie.
Yeah,
you're going to know the time that they go, especially if you follow Jeff.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, there's people I thought were dead 20 years, and he pulls them out every day.
Who was the latest celebrity to pass away? Somebody passed away last week. Oh, yeah, Jeffrey Tambor's career. I do. Speaking of Jeffrey Tambor, that movie that he's in, the comedy about Joseph Stalin, they didn't take him out of it, so I applaud whoever made that movie. I'm going to see that Monday.
Yeah, Stuck with Their Guns and, you know.
Death of Stalin, I think it's called.
Yeah, apparently, all he did was watch a trans woman sleep. That's the whole thing.
Okay, I need some context because that's creepy one way
she
or
was
another.
His assistant. And
she said he watched her sleep.
Yeah. He said.
Here's the tweet I didn't send when I saw that.
They should hook up.
Everybody likes to watch a train wreck.
He said that they should hook up. And apparently, allegedly.
Allegedly.
And she said, well, I'm trans and I'm not comfortable being naked in front of people. I'm not ready to have sex. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he goes, you're fine naked. I've seen you sleeping naked before, you know. I've watched you sleeping naked. And that was it. He was saying that he had seen her naked.
Boy, that's practically rape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're sidetracked.
Zero tolerance.
That's right. The whole world is a blah, 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 blah. The end of times. Men. Men are the problem. Toxic masculinity on this day of International Women.
Bringing it back to Kevin. I think Autumn last week, I don't like Kevin. I don't like talking about the way he dresses or his looks. I kind of lean towards the idea that a lot of professional people wear the same outfit every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's lack of choice. You know, they don't have to think about it. They can just put the same
suit,
turtleneck on, and the same pants and go make your Apple products.
Okay. You know? Yeah.
So he was famously did that. So Kevin kind of goes along that route, and I kind of give him that because he's ashamed of his body.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it boils down to. I mean, and he's very open with it. And I've kind of forgotten about it over the years. Mm-hmm, I kind of look over those things. But what most people don't realize is how much of a feminist sympathizer that Kevin really is. He's not this misogynist guy who comes up with dick and fart jokes.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, by any means. I mean, Jen would, I'm sure his wife.
Very
much.
But he has daughters, right?
A daughter.
Does he have children? More than one kid?
No, just one daughter.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a thing that surprises a lot of people as well, that he very much and also surprises them when they found out how long he worked with Harvey Weinstein.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fit him to be in a room or situation with Harvey. And I think that over time really kind of blew, that's why he separated himself.
Right.
He knew their stories. He had heard the things. And I'm sure when he's your cash cow and putting you in this mansion in Beverly, in the hills, and you got to keep your lifestyle up, at what point do you separate the two? You have to, go to work, make the money, and live your life how you want. But, I guess that's politics.
I think the dudes that worked with Harvey probably had a much different experience, though, than a lot of other people.
What do you mean?
Like, there's no casting couch for Kevin Smith.
For Ben Affleck or any of those guys.
Yeah, but it also brings back those stories, if you remember, about when they were doing a lot, like McCarthy.
Right.
All those, Jenny McCarthy had that horror story, and she hated Kevin Smith because she did an audition, and then when she walked out of the room, she said, allegedly, they all laughed when she walked out.
They probably laughed because she's a terrible actress.
Exactly. And but you don't want to say that to their face, so you let her live with the,
Right.
They laughed at you. And then that built up over years, and it just came out as rumor.
Yeah.
And that's where the story, of their fallout happened.
The problem I have with the Harvey Weinstein thing, and I don't think that I'm not sympathizing with him by any means or defending him, but why didn't they go after him when it was happening? Why didn't Uma Thurman say something 20 years ago? Why didn't...
Because her husband was still working with him and getting money from him.
So? Did they tell her to shut up?
Maybe.
I think it still boils down to the... I'm going to earn. I mean,
it's
how much do you turn a blind eye to the hand that feeds you?
Yeah.
Plus, until you make enough.
And
that was just the culture
then.
A lot of people would just go, that's Harvey being Harvey.
Yeah, like Oprah all the people that knew about it didn't say anything.
Yeah, they just chalk it up to being who they are.
But you keep swatting it. If everybody attacks the foundation at one time, which is what happened, then the house falls, and that's what's happened to him.
Yeah, completely.
And where did he go? He went to a bar a couple of weeks ago. But it turns out that the guy asked for a photo, and Harvey said no. Right. And they're like, get out of here. I don't know why that turned into a bad Trump, but... speaking of misogyny.
Oh, dude, your open mic today was hilarious.
Which open mic?
Just your open
mic. Oh, the character.
Yeah, the character of open mic. That was classic.
Hi. It was super creepy. I enjoyed getting into that.
I thought it was funny. You went with it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was great.
So, Kevin has made how many films now, Jeff?
What, 13?
But wait, let me back up a little bit. You're talking about the money and working with Harvey and wanting to maintain that lifestyle. Kevin did a good thing by creating the podcast network, building his own brand, stepping away from the film industry, doing the TV show, Comic Book Men, and the podcasts. So he's branched off from that.
Oh, yeah. And it started, I think, with the Q&As. He was one of the few people that started, he goes, I can get up on stage and I can talk about four things for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And people will pay me to do that.
Yeah.
And so, I love to talk. Let's go do that.
Right.
And so, that became more of a moneymaker for the family than the movies did. The movie, I think, were the gravy.
Yeah.
You know, in his fortune, quote unquote.
When Clerks 2 came out, I went with Tim Frazier, who was the producer of the Regular Guys show. So this must have been 2006, maybe?
Yeah, 2006. Yeah.
So we went and saw a screening, and after the screening, the next day, or maybe Kevin was, I don't know if Kevin was there, but he was on the Regular Guys show in person the next day, and he was just the nicest guy. Great interview. I wish we had kept him the whole show. I think he did like an hour with us. And I wish I had the audio of that. I don't know where to find it either, because this is like the second go-round at Clear Channel, and I don't think there's any archives from that. But it was fun, and he was a nice guy. And and Clerks 2, I thought was hilarious.
I thought it was, too. I thought that it was, if you hadn't seen any movie in between Clerks and Clerks 2, it really picked up right, given, what it's about. You know, that he wrote Clerks for the 20-something that he was.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Clerks 2 to be more of the late 30-something that he was. And Clerks 3 was going to be, a continuation of that.
I don't know if that'll ever get made.
No, probably not. No. I hope he puts it out as a script or comic book.
Comic
book
would be good, graphic novel.
Yeah, that would be good.
I mean, when your actor doesn't want your main actor, because Randall was going to be the main character in this, where Clerks 2 was Dante's story.
Yeah.
This was Randall's story. So when your main actor doesn't want to act.
See, I don't understand that.
Well, he wasn't an actor.
Yeah. No, but it's a nice payday.
Yeah, well, if you can get paid.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
Ah, okay.
I mean, he made Clerks. It became a cult phenomenon, and he backed off. You know, Anderson didn't really do anything. He wrote a film and had Kevin, somewhat work with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it didn't do well, and so he kind of got out of acting. And then when Clerks 2 came up, it was, hey, we're going to make Clerks 2. He wasn't interested at all. But Kevin talked him
into it. Yeah, Kev gave him a bunch of his own money.
Yeah, he forego his own pay to get, say, this is going to allot to you.
I didn't know that.
And then, when it...
And then they were supposed to get points or back end or something, and they had to sue
Harvey
to get the money out of him.
Ah.
And that, and...
So I guess I put a bad taste in his mouth.
I mean, why go back to that again? Because that
was... What does
he
do for a living?
He lives in the high mountains in California.
Yeah, he lives in like a retirement community. I don't know what he does for work.
Yeah, I have no idea what, because he's not on social media. He doesn't, he doesn't really communicate.
Does he ever go on any of the podcasts or the shows?
No, he's been on a Smodcast one or two times in the last, 8 years maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they still friends at least?
After the Clerks 3 debacle, I don't know.
Huh.
Honestly, I mean, they had set up shop in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd set up shop in Pittsburgh, set the production office up. It already got set sites and sets, started work, and he just backs out like a week or 2 weeks before.
My favorite scene in Clerks 2 is when he's making fun of the clerk, and they do the whole Star Wars versus Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I love that scene.
And you would think that Kevin had a thing about, Lord of the Rings, and it's funny how he puts so much of himself in these characters.
Oh, yeah.
What I want to see is the movie of the real Clerks with Kevin as Dante,
Brian Johnson as Randall.
Yeah.
And Walt as Brody.
Right.
Which I always thought was fun. Brody from Mallrats, the main character, is, Walt that runs the comic book store, but not Walt.
Right.
It's all the bad, all the negative things about Walt were in that character. And then he had to make an equal good side, cool side of the character. And that's what Brody, Jason Lee did that.
Yeah.
And did
Jason
a good
Lee.
Job at it too.
Have you ever been to that comic book store?
No, I've never,
you've been there a bunch
He's
of times.
Been there. I know.
I've been there a couple times. Yeah.
No, as much, I have the Kevin syndrome with Gretzky about the whole thing. I don't want to meet my heroes.
Yeah.
They become people when you meet them.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't want to meet them.
That's happened to me when I met comedians.
Yeah.
A couple of times. Usually they're quite nice, but I mean, in a radio setting, it's different.
Yeah, you're focused.
Yeah, I met William Shatner, and I always loved William Shatner, and he turned out to be a prick. And then it took me about 2-3 years to get over that. Now I love him again because I follow him on Twitter and he's hilarious. Plus he goes to 4chan and surfs all.
Yeah.
He goes to all the boards on 4chan and he makes me laugh.
I like the idea that you like a character and you want to know the character, but when the character knows you, that's where it falls apart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's why I was nervous about coming tonight.
Why?
No, I didn't, I didn't want you guys to be assholes.
We're not, though.
No, I know.
Just get out. Tim's an asshole.
I'm not an asshole.
No, you guys aren't. That's great. I love taking what you guys do and repeating it on the internet via pictures.
So you've been making the
deep fakes.
The deep fakes.
Yeah. Now, I've been playing at it, yeah.
Do you know how, did you know how to do stuff like that before, or did you use the app?
I've always used, when I got an iPhone, here's a good Kevin story, and I think you know this one. Kevin, one of the other podcasts on Kevin's network is Tell 'Em Steve Dave, which is, it became Comic Book Men, and they took a couple of episodes of Tell 'Em Steve Dave, sent it to AMC, and they were like, this is what, this is what you need, this is it, this is the show. So they started their podcast, and they got 17 in or so, and I got an iPhone. So I was like, I love these guys. Let me do a tribute to them via Photoshop.
No, wait a minute. What kind of tribute?
It's pretty damn close.
Okay.
I actually took some photos, and their humor – okay, the topic of the time at Tell 'Em Steve Dave was the story of Brian Johnson doing his girlfriend's mom. That was the topic of conversation.
From AC/DC?
No, Brian Johnson, the
of comic book man.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, the bearded guy.
All right,
He had his, he was telling the story about he's living with his girlfriend and her mom, and his girlfriend would go to the shop, and he would do her nasty mother and just describe she was like lunch lady bad.
Nice.
And so they were all giving him shit over it. And so I was like, oh, that's hilarious, and you're right. When you listen to people and you listen to private conversations, which I mean, it's not private, but you listen to a conversation, you think you know those people
or
you feel that you're part of that little group.
You do. That's the best shows are, sorry to interrupt
No,
I'm not trying to derail you here, but the best shows on radio and podcasts, there's no beginning and no end. There's just a conversation.
It picks up.
And you are welcome to be a part of that and listen. And I learned this years ago when I was living alone in Shippensburg in Pennsylvania going to school. I got Stern for the first time to where I could hear it every single day instead of, tuning into a station from Buffalo on AM at 4 in the morning. I was listening to that show every day, and it dawned on me back then, these guys, you relate. You become friends, and you listen in your head, and you think, God, if I meet them, I can talk to them just like they're my buds.
Yeah.
Now, you could never do that with Howard. You probably couldn't do that with Baba Booey. But we met Stuttering John, 2015?
Yeah.
2015. And he was the coolest guy. I mean, he acted like, hey, and I met Eric Beeman, high-pitched Eric a couple weeks ago. And this guy was a whackpacker, and they make fun of him mercilessly. But I'm revering this guy.
Yeah.
This guy, it's like, because I've heard him for years and years and years. So
And the same with once I realized that you did everything you did on Regular Guys. I mean, I listened to the Regular Guys stuff through high school.
Oh, I'm sure.
And through work at the time, and work construction at the time. So it was on all the time.
Right.
And the night that I put two and two together and figured out that you were the gas fairy blew my mind.
Wait, what do you mean?
That you did the voice.
Oh, the gas. But you didn't know back then?
No, I mean, I would
might
hear
not,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They didn't tell. I mean, you would hear the snippet, like at the time that they would, okay, where are you at and what are you doing?
Oh, that's right.
And it was like, they didn't say that, oh, this is Tim.
Yeah, that's right, they did.
You were the character.
Yep.
And so, the same kind of thing. It's like all these things just kind of like, oh, man.
All those characters back then. I did, before 2005, anything you heard me do on the Regular Guys, I never got credit for it. I mean, not credit. That's the horrible thing to say. I'm saying that it wasn't Tim Andrews. It was Lester Chalmers or Curtis Washington, who was my favorite character of all time that I ever did. And Travis Elliott and Ricky from Henry County.
Yeah.
All those characters. But you can't do that anymore.
No, it's a different
because
world.
Because people can find, they go to social media, which is, again, why Phil Hendry can't do the radio show that he did back then.
And his talking on the phone, talk at the same time.
Yeah.
Making 16 voices at one time.
His podcast is incredible.
Yeah, I've heard it. You mentioned it.
Oh, my God. He has General Galen Shaw. And that's my staff pick, and we'll get to it later. But the what character? The free gas fairy. It was just this thing that we came up with to give away gas. Because remember, gas was so expensive.
Oh, yeah. Five bucks a gallon.
It was ridiculous.
And we were giving it away and going to, God, I would show up at these businesses dressed up. And I had makeup on and these little beboppers on my head and the pink jumpsuit.
I wondered if you were in costume or not.
Oh, no, I had a pink jumpsuit and I wore lipstick
and a tutu.
Yeah, there was a tutu. Angel wings. It's like, hey, 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 it's the Free Gas Fairy, sweating to the oldies. And then we tried to do it at Rock 100.5, and because there was another gas problem. This was 2008 or 9, and Racetrack thought it was too gay.
Oh.
Not that they were afraid of homophobia or that they were being they were the ones going, we don't want to be associated with this.
All right.
And it was very strange. It was a very successful campaign. And there was the last billboard I was on. I was dressed as that guy, the Free Gas Fairy. And the whole storyline of that, Ben the Bunny Man was still alive.
Yeah.
And he was an integral part of the show. And I created this character called Bob the Bunny Man, who was a handsome guy, extremely good looking, hair lip. And he'd be on the show, and I'd call him and go, hey, man, I'm really good looking, man. You're ugly, man. That's your problem. You're never going to get laid. And we ended up having a wrestling match, and I was dressed as a bunny. And I had this awful, heavy, I mean, there were hundreds of people around. I forget where it was. And I had this heavy bunny costume on, and we're wrestling and wrestling. And then the head pops off. And the bunny head pops off at the end after, you know, Bob the Bunny Man loses the fight. And it's Pumper. And Larry goes, oh, my God, it's Pumper. He was doing it all along. And I'm like, oh, he beat me up. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway, rambling. Go ahead.
No, going back to the story.
Right.
So I decided, because you feel like you're friends with these people,
mm-hmm.
I felt that I could do similar things. You know, I created with my phone Photoshop. And I was like, Photoshop's so easy on an iPhone. And when it first, you know, compared to a desktop.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I would make these quick little things. So what I did for Tell 'Em Steve Dave was I made a picture with each one of them. I think I got all four pictures from Gay Porn Science. And I took their
heads. It's nice to have that in your history.
Yeah. I took their heads off and put them on the bodies and then put them through some filters.
Right.
And it looked pretty creepy. I mean, it looked like something that, you know, a serial killer would send you.
And I love you guys.
And I got the worst. And because those guys feel like your friends, when they receive them on the next episode and you hear Walt use the words, this guy needs to be taken off the streets. Someone call the police on this guy. It really kind of freaks you out.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that same. Have you seen the Tom Segura new special
on
Netflix?
Yet. No, no.
Yeah, same thing. He talks about the football players. A friend of his wanted to get autographs from the football team after they had lost a game in the alleyway. It's like, you know, you don't do that.
No.
You know, it was this, as far as me thinking that I could be friends with them and joke with them like friends do, yeah, that quickly was chopped completely in half. Of course, now I've got that moniker that, you know, I was the guy with those pictures on episode 17, which, did I ever send you those?
Yeah, I thought we did.
You've created stuff, Jeff, for people that they've used. You Evan Handler used your GIF on MySpace.
As far as Kevin and stuff goes, meeting Kevin is cool, and Kevin is super nice.
You've met him a bunch, right?
Yeah, I've met him a few times, and he remembers me and
says
hey, and but meeting Walt, I've met him a couple times, and Walt is Walt.
Yeah,
he doesn't remember me anytime I've been in there.
Who's the guy that you meet? Scott Mosier, right? He was in town once.
Yeah, Mosier was super nice. Brian Johnson, though, not super nice.
No, why not?
Really?
And he's my hero because Randall is based on him.
Oh, okay.
And, from Clerks.
No, I've had some email back and forth with Brian.
But I mean, I've talked to him online. I've talked to him in person. I met him on the cruise a couple times. He just is himself and doesn't. I don't think he gives a shit about you know, anybody else's fandom of him.
Well, yeah. I think he'd be the first one to tell you that.
Yeah.
Some people don't believe that they have fans and can't handle it.
Right.
Yeah, so they just block it out.
Yeah, at first, I don't like calling them fans because that makes you sound like a douchebag.
I still love the dude. Don't get me wrong.
No.
Definitely.
In person, I understand why some people don't want to meet their heroes.
But the first time I encountered something weird, I was at Kroger. And we lived in Vinings. Jeff and I had an apartment in Vinings. And I went over to Kroger right across the street. And I was shopping for groceries. And I'm walking along and there's this dude staring. And then I go down to the next aisle and the guy's staring. And I go down to the next aisle, and the guy's staring, and this is creeping me out. And finally, he comes up to me, and he says, "Hey, are you Tim Andrews from the Regular Guy Show?" And I said, uh-huh. And he goes, I'm a big fan, man. Just wanted to shake your hand. Now, that has happened a million times since then, and
the
I
worst
love it.
Was the pizza guy.
The pizza guy, that scared the shit out of me. We ordered from Domino's one night, and the guy's just standing there. He's all muscle and weird looking and shaking. That freaked me out. Anytime that Jeff would kept ordering from there, and I would hide in my room.
Hey, everybody. Caitlin Jenner here for Radio Labyrinth. You know you can donate to Radio Labyrinth at Patreon. That's right. Patreon.com/TimAndrew. So let's read the roll call of radios. Radio roll call. Hey. Matt Talley, Mark Weiland, Aaron Roberts, JB, Keith Tate, Buck Monterey, AJ Dysart, Wayne Blair, Jeremy Truman, Dallas Walker, Herb Lamb, Rusty Weinberg, Kevin Stokes, Chad Shepard, a handsome devil, Chris Weiland, Ryan Humans, Darren Downey, Dan Carroll, he has the sexiest beard. Anyway, off track. Denise Reynolds, Brian Jackson, Zach Pittman, Beth Van Elswick, Luke Caniglio, Mike Hall, David C. Funk, Matt Carter, Jonathan Wilson, Eric Malmstrom, Colin Ullman, Amber Gilpatrick, Wendy Muller. I love Wendy Muller. Jose Perales, Nick Frank, Chris Knight, Trent, and last but not least, Dustin Lawler, who's actually on today's show. If you're at a level where you got a sketch coming to you, don't worry. Tim Andrews is working on his doodle. In fact, he's playing with his doodle right now in front of me, and it's quite disgusting. Anyway, your doodles will be in the mail this weekend. And, again, that website, what's that website? Okay. Patreon.com/Tim Andrews. Thanks.
But I got used to it. And it kind of pisses my wife off because she's on TV. Nobody, hey, I mean, it happens from time to time. But we'll be out. How can you get noticed? You're not on television. So, well, the internet.
Well, you also know the ones that notice you know you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're religiously listening.
Yeah.
Enough to know what a disembodied voice on a radio, who they really are.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to look a little bit, even with social media nowadays.
It weirded me out because I'm extremely private and try to be private. Anything, 90% of the stuff that I put on social media is nothing to do with my life. And I've never really had high self-esteem. Certainly, if I had, I'd be way more successful. Because you have to have high self-esteem in order to be successful.
Of course.
It's the only way. You have to be sure of yourself. And now that I'm almost 50, I finally think I have enough to, and I'm comfortable. But it is weird to experience that when you are such a fan of other people, because I consider I'm a fan of Bobcat Goldthwait, and when I met him, I was in reverence, and
Bob was cool though.
He is, and if I saw him now, and I'd be chill. But there are people that have been on the show, and I do totally geek out on him. And speaking of Jeffrey Tambor, I interviewed him, and I knew that if I didn't do a lot of prep, I would totally nerd out and freak.
Right.
Because toward the end of the regular guys, we were doing those one-on-one interviews, and I was doing geeking out with Tim.
Yeah, those are good.
Thank you. And I got to interview him, and so I watched the first episode of Transparent, and then I did all my research, and I approached it from, I'm going to be confident.
Research.
I did do research. I talked about
Bailey J. Research.
That's a separate issue altogether. How could you turn that down? Your cock is huge. The fact that I brought up the Ropers, I mean, that broke the ice right away. Mm-hmm. And he was comfortable with me, and I was comfortable with him. And there were other interviews. I did an interview with Gillian Anderson. That was the worst interview I've ever done in my life, where I didn't do enough research. And then I said, it's nice to see that women who are writing sci-fi are getting prominence. And she goes, Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein. Fucking derailed it. And she didn't need to do that. But then I was like, all right, you cunt. I'm gonna I mean, she's not, but that's how I felt.
Speaking of derailing... Alec Baldwin had a show. They showed it after the Oscars, very late after the Oscars, and I set my DVR to tape for like 2 hours after the Oscars, just in case it went long.
Mm.
And that show came on, and it's like one of those Tom Snyder kind of interview shows where he just sits down with one person. He had two people on. He had Seinfeld, and he had Kate McKinnon on. But it's kind of like a Later with Bob Costas. Remember that, where it's just a really good interview show? But he goes back and forth with Seinfeld because, Seinfeld, every time Seinfeld, gives an answer, he's like, oh, yeah, he's taking a piss out of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time. And finally, Alec was like, every answer doesn't have to be at my expense. But it's a really good interview show. And it was supposed to be like a pilot episode, so I don't know if it'll get picked up, but look for it if it comes back.
I look at it. I love Alec Baldwin. And I know a lot of people hate him because he's a liberal. You know, I do political talk radio, so, you know.
Of course.
Not for, I mean, Eric's not super political, but it is political, and it's on a political news talk station. But Alec Baldwin is a super liberal. I don't give a shit. I think he's great.
He's so funny.
I think he's funny. Hilarious. He's a fantastic actor, and, you know, he'll go on these rants and shit. But deep down inside, he's an evil prick, and I respect evil pricks.
You have to.
There are certain people who virtue signal so much that I can't follow them anymore. But if I really enjoy people, I don't care. I'll just, you know, turn off their retweets because celebrities retweet so much bullshit. I just turn off the retweets. I don't care.
Yeah, I try to stay. Usually on Facebook a lot. Twitter, I'm on, but I try to stay away from those political threads.
Oh, yeah.
It's just
not me.
I jump in with both feet.
I like to throw gas on the fire.
Oh yeah, and you know, the kind of gas you throw, you have that. You can throw that kind of gas.
Well, I pulled that all away from Facebook because Facebook is a lot of relatives and friends, mm-hmm. and then, you know, underneath that, if I post something and I'm having a discussion with real people that I've known my whole life and relatives. And then somebody who listens to me on the radio says, "Fuck you, Lynn." Talking to my stepmother. It's like, no, I don't want that on.
Yeah,
there.
You got to keep those things.
You know, I don't want my stepmother or my dad being attacked, you know, or my brother or anybody.
Yeah, you don't want that phone call. What'd you say this time?
Yeah, and you can't, with Facebook, you can't. The thing I've always hated about it is that you can't make a post and then shut off the comments. The comments have to, you can't.
Yeah, only if it's in a group. And you control the group.
But on your main page, you can't do that. And so anybody can post anything, and then you got to monitor it and all that. Facebook is fun, and it's, I don't know if it's fun, but it's a good way to share stuff, which is why I keep it, especially for Radio Labyrinth and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But I don't do any shit posting on Facebook anymore.
Yeah.
Shit posting is for Twitter, and I very rarely do it on my main Twitter profile, but I do have a troll account. But even then, I've dialed that back because I want to keep it.
Yeah, you're pulling so much stuff off.
And you just don't be a prick.
My whole Twitter get back is just, I'll tell them Steve, Dave, and Practical Jokers, pretty much.
So you guys want to talk about our favorite movies? I mean, or do you have more that you want to share? I mean, you took notes, so let's talk.
Oh, no, just, you know, as far as, you know, Kevin's movies go, you know, he had his Viewsk universe, you know, which was the movies all the way up to Clerks 2.
Right.
And then everything after has been in its own,
mm-hmm.
Well, I guess Zach and Miri Make a Porno. It was the last Weinstein movie.
That was a good movie.
It was a great movie.
Yeah.
Horrible marketing. I think that was
terrible marketing.
That was something I think was the beginnings of Kevin's and Harvey's
You had an
rub.
Apatow-like cast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those people all worked with Judd.
Oh, yeah.
Apatow. But it was the right kind of film at the right time.
And everybody that saw it said, oh, my God, you finally got a hit on your hands.
Yeah. No support all for right.
No, you got to market the thing with stick figures.
And
yeah.
But it came out like on a Halloween or something, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly, and like nobody wanted to go to the movies that night.
Right.
And,
yeah, it was stacked. Yeah. You know, everything was stacked against it.
And what's come out since then?
Well, after Zach and Miri, he kind of started his podcast and his him getting stoned on a regular basis combined with talking to Scott Mosier on this podcast weekly, which was just a thing designed for them to sit down and shoot the shit because they had started kind of separating as far as their careers had gone.
Right.
So it was time for friends to sit down and talk. And they talk like friends talk when you're sitting there for 2 and 3 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, the subject goes way out of bounds. And from that, you know, came Tusk. It was birthed from an ad that they thought was real when they first read it, and then come to find out, you know, it was right. an art post. But they even pulled that guy in.
Mm.
You know, that's how Kevin is. He's so inclusive, you know, of all these people. It's like, hey, you wrote that. I got that idea from you. Come on, you know, be a producer on the movie.
Was Kevin a fan of The Human Centipede?
He's a fan of the director. Only because how out there he can be.
That the first one was amazing. The second one was grotesque.
And then it just became torture porn after that.
Yeah. The first one had...
Not that the first one was...
No, but it had the element of it, but wrapped around the torture porn was an interesting film about a crazy mad scientist
mm-hmm.
and these poor people. I remember we met all three of those people. I have an autograph of all three of them in the chain of The Human Centipede.
Nice.
And they each sign above themselves. So.
All right.
But Tusk was very enjoyable. But what has he done since then? I mean,
Well, he continued. He started what he called his White North trilogy,
right.
Which was Tusk, then Yoga Hosers, which Yoga Hosers he wrote for his daughter.
Okay.
His daughter and Johnny Depp's daughter. They're both, you know, they went to school together. They were friends, you know, from kindergarten up. Mm-hmm. So he always had this connection with Johnny Depp that nobody really knew of.
Whoa, but, yeah.
So he all of a sudden Johnny Depp shows up in Tusk, mm-hmm. and then he shows up in Yoga Hosers, and the only, you know, I've never even
heard of Yoga Hosers. Am I lame for not having heard of?
No, it's his most recent movie, but at the same time, it's probably written for. He said that he wrote it for a teenage girl audience.
Okay,
and so it plays like that. It plays like something you'd see, you know. It's kind of like Nickelodeon on acid. Kind of,
yeah.
You know, the story of two girls in a convenience store, very much the same setup as Clerks, with his, you know, the two girls, but at the same time, there's an underground Nazi bunker under the store with Ralph Garman playing a guy who's creating this army of bratwursts filled with sauerkraut, mini bratwursts filled with sauerkraut. So there's 1 foot little. Nazi soldiers running around, and they're all Kevin. You know, he did the makeup and did the
All right, CGI. I'm going to have to watch this now.
Yeah, you got to watch it.
Yeah, it's nuts. And you'll like Ralph, because Ralph's, you know, his thing is impersonations. I mean, he does great impersonations.
Yeah. I don't care about other impressionists. Fuck them. No, that's not true.
He does people you don't do, though. Like Adam West, he does real good. And
I mostly do politicians anyway.
Right.
Yeah, his are more like classic Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah, type stuff. And modern Hollywood.
That's the stuff I like.
Yeah.
You
dig it. I think.
When I was a kid, it was Rich Little and Fred Travellino whenever they were on television.
I think he was influenced.
I was going to say, you're speaking as if, same thing I've heard.
Well, we're going to wrap up pretty shortly, so let's do the, unless you have more that you haven't shared.
No, I just, you know, Red State was the only one I wanted to mention.
Red State.
That's probably, you asked me to pick my five Kevin Smith movies.
Yeah, okay, we'll move on to that. You pick your top five.
My top five went Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is number five.
Mm-hmm.
Dogma is four.
Love Dogma.
I liked it, especially growing up in a religious background.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a minister, and you know, I did the rebellious teenage thing, so it really kind of rang true. Mallrats, the original cut, Clerks, and Red State. It's my favorite of his movies. It's probably the most real.
It's the least Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah, but you could tell it so much in the writing.
Yeah,
but the shock value is what really gets you, and it highlights Michael Parks. You know,
mm-hmm.
he was an actor who, you know, unfortunately was blacklisted from Hollywood early on. And
why? Because he was a communist or something?
Yeah, it was mentioned that also he had dealings with studios that he wanted to buck the system.
Mm.
It didn't, you know, he was of the ilk, kind of in the country setting where you had Waylon Jennings and the outlaw section of country. He did that with acting. Of course, he was also a singer, a country singer too. So he kind of felt he could parlay that into
being a bad boy in Hollywood.
Didn't work out that way.
No.
Never
but does.
Great job. You know, we lost him a year ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah. He played the sheriff in Kill Bill.
Yes.
And he also played
Tarantino movies.
Yeah.
But he also played the guy in Mexico.
Yeah.
Luis Billy.
Yeah, with the mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love those movies. And again, just to derail for 1 second, Uma Thurman got fucked up in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
The car wreck and all that. And, but again, those two movies are fantastic.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the whole thing strung together?
Yes.
I mean, one without the edit. Yeah, it's great.
I love that. I also, I liked Grindhouse, even though I had to go and get new underwear and after I sharded.
Oh, that was Grindhouse on your
side? Yeah, it was the first one I sharded in the theater, and then I went down to Home Depot,
Old Navy.
And I got a pair of underwear off the rack, and I went back and cleaned myself off with the
nice
shitty ones, and I put on the new underwear and shorts, and I walked up and I had the receipts, and she goes, "Oh, we don't allow people to wear the clothes out of here." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry." And she goes, "I'm sorry, you're gonna have to go back in and change." I go, "I could open the bag and show you the pants that I crapped in, or you could just let me pay." "I'll let you pay."
There you go. There's always a bend in that rule.
Yeah.
Especially when shit's involved.
When we're talking about Kevin Smith and his writing, I meant to bring this up earlier, but he was influenced heavily by Gregory MacDonald,
who wrote the Fletch. Books that yeah. Fletch is based on. Yeah.
In fact, didn't he do a treatment for Fletch?
Yes. Right, he wanted to do Fletch 1 when they were going to...
W-O-N.
W-O-N when they were going to reboot it.
And that would have been Affleck, probably.
Actually, yeah. He talked about Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
And which would have been... Yeah, I mean, Deadpool is... And I've always said Deadpool was... Fletch with a mask,
right?
You know, and a gun.
Deadpool is so good
because all the you know anybody that can deadpan, you know, like Chevy Chase.
Yes,
you know, he can. He could do it. I think he also wanted.
Who's going to be who? Who do you want?
At the same time that he was Ryan Reynolds, he was also looking at Seth Rogen. I was like, I don't really see Seth Rogen bringing
either.
Off the Fletch lines.
No,
as Ryan Reynolds.
Has Fletch been remade or somebody remaking it?
No,
it kind of fell by the wayside.
Good. Yeah. I don't think it needs to be
It doesn't need to be picked up if it can't be picked up properly.
Mm-mm. Well, maybe they
but
could
those
have.
Books, man, they should. There's such a wealth of great material.
Jeff had all of them in high school, all the paperbacks.
My stepdad did, and I would pick them out. And actually, Fletch 1 was the first one that I actually read straight through. But I love the other movies. My favorite one's the second one.
Really?
Fletch Lives, the southern one where he goes to New Orleans, or to...
The first one just had so many good quotes in it.
Yeah. Well, I just like the preacher.
I've only seen it one time. Am I sad? Yes.
it's got some good one-liners.
And yet I've seen Smoking the Bandit 3 probably 250 times. I'm going to be the bandit.
My top five are Zack and Miri Make a Porno, number 5.
Mm-hmm.
Dogma, number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Clerks, number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Clerks 2, number 2. And Chasing Amy, number 1.
Chasing Amy.
Why'd you choose Chasing Amy as your number one?
That's just my favorite of his movies, and I think Affleck's fucking fantastic in it, and it's got the most heart, I think, of all of his movies, and that monologue in the car.
With the rain.
Yeah. After that's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
The Chasing Amy part where Silent Bob opens up and he tells Jay to shut the fuck up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a great scene.
Yeah,
It's weird that I picked Clerks 2 over Clerks, but I like the fact that they had more money and there's more heart to it, I guess.
There's a lot more heart to it.
Yeah.
Well, they had it perfected by that time.
Right.
It was almost, you know, it could have been some of the same group of people doing something 20 years or 15 years later that, you know, they couldn't have done at the time. And, I mean, when you see the movie, the restaurant, the background is a hotel that wraps around. You can see it in the parking lot.
Right.
That was where they stayed, the entire production.
Really?
So the entire production was this, you know, restaurant in the middle, hotel, motel wrapped around. Each one of them had a room, and they stayed there for a couple of months while they were making the movie, and it was just a fun time.
That was. That's cool. I didn't know that. Well, the thing about Clerks is again, our generation, but it does it, to me, Clerks doesn't have a beginning and an end. You just should. You show up, you're there, and at the end, you're done.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a story, but I'm saying that it's just a slice of life that you're observing what's going on.
You could definitely use it as a time capsule.
Yeah.
For the 90s, anyway.
Absolutely. All right, I'll tell you my top five, and then we'll do staff picks. My top five in this order are number 5, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I think that movie's super fucking funny. I loved it. I still watch it. Mallrats is number 4. I love Mallrats. I loved the cast. I think is good. Anything with Michael Rooker will make a top 5 list. Chasing Amy is number 3, pretty much for the same reasons. It's a very well done, heartfelt film. I think the writing is great. The acting is great. What's the actress's name? Joey
Lorraine Adams?
Joey Lauren Adams.
Yeah.
She should have been a bigger star. She's a great actress.
It would have been if it wasn't for her voice, she said.
Yeah.
That, she said that's the one thing that's got her. She has that squeaky.
Well, they could find something.
Jennifer Tilly voice.
Yeah. Well, she could do Family Guy. Number 2, Dogma. Again, for the cast and the source material, religion. Because at the time that came out, it was, wow, taking on the Catholic Church.
George Carlin.
Yeah. George Carlin, great. Yeah. Alanis Morissette, great. Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Severus Snape.
Yeah, of course. He's great in it.
Yeah.
Close your mind, Mr. Potter. Anyway, and the number 1 is Clerks, because I think Clerks is really an iconic piece of film, certainly from the era, and it'll last. I don't know, though, this generation of people now that are going to movies, they have such high expectations, and the more we progress through the progressive infiltration of film, it'll be less about the movie and more about how it gets made and do you have the right people working on it and stuff. And that's a whole different story, and we don't need to get into it. But Clerks exists in a time that'll never be replicated in our history, ever.
No.
Of the 90s were pure independence. Independent everything rose. Independent music, independent film, independent television. And eventually that's been grabbed. And anything that's it's independent, it's still studio.
Yeah. Well, coming from the band point of view, mm-hmm. it's one of those things people are always saying, when are you going to sell out? Are you sold out? It's like, yeah, that's how I'm going to live.
That's the goal.
That's what I intended to do from the day, from the way it began. But, you know, that era was the thing. You didn't want to sell out to the man.
No.
You know, you wanted to make it yourself.
Well, the man bought you out, whether you wanted it or not.
Hello, this is my Walking Dead hate-watching recap. So first of all, the whole episode is driven by these Chirons that come up and just have these people's names, the characters' names. So we have Michonne, Negan, Enid. No one remembers who that is. That's Tits McSullen face. Oh, I called her Sullen McBig Tits. That's her name. Okay, we have Simon, Jadis, who is the leader of the Garbage People. And then finally, we have Rick. So we start off with Michonne. Rick and Michonne have buried Coral. He did. I was wrong, you guys. I had that weird theory that maybe he wouldn't die and that maybe Rick has been dead this whole time. But anyway, that's wrong. And then we just see Michonne. She's all, you know, in her feelings. She's stabbing zombies in the face. She's shutting the gate, even though those zombies were blocking the gate. But whatever, that's fine. She sees the handprints on the front porch that Coral and Judith had done. She's all sad. They see the gazebo is on fire, and she says something about how that Coral used to sit on the roof or something. So they want to go and put out the fire with fire extinguishers, which personally I feel is a waste of fire extinguisher resources and probably would not even work anymore. Like those things take maintenance, they expire, but we're also living in a world with zombies and in a world where gasoline just continues to work forever, which is not true. Gasoline eventually, like, I don't know what it does, like goes rancid or something. It doesn't work anymore. Anyway, they're leaving Alexandria. Rick wants to go and talk to the Garbage People. They walk into the Garbage People lair, and it looks like it's booby-trapped. All these things fall down and blocks their way out, and they step in some blue paint, which I guess we'll find out something later. And then there are some really weird shots here. Like, they're kind of in, like, a Tarantino movie where they, like, are zooming in on Rick and Michonne. It's just like a strange little change in directing, or no, the cinematography of the show, which I thought was like, maybe people aren't noticing. I noticed it because I don't know why. Anyway, the next Chiron we see is Negan. He's talking to the Westworld guy. I don't know what his name is. Oh, Simon, I think is his name. I'm going to call him Westworld, so just get ready. He's talking to Westworld guy. He's needing to reel him in because Westworld guy wants to just kill everybody. He wants to sweep everything clean. He wants to, what did he say? He wants to scrape the plate clean, scrape the whatever is garbage on the plate into the trash. Negan is, I wrote this down. Negan is kind of like an honest Rick. Rick is killing and taking over places, all sort of under the guise of I'm doing what's best for everyone. And Negan is kind of doing the same thing, except he's really honest and saying, like, we're going to have to kill some people to save a lot of people. Not to say that he's some saint. I mean, he is like burning that dude's face in front of everyone. I mean, he is a monster, but at least he's an honest monster. Rick is pretending to be virtuous, but he really is a monster too. Anyway, also I really got to thinking that Negan was pretty hot in this scene. I don't know why. He was like really flexing his muscle with the Westworld and sort of telling him what to do and, I don't know, peeing everywhere to show his dominance. Anyway, let's see. Oh, and so they bring in a coffin. It's got a zombie guy in it. Turns out the zombie guy is one of Westworld's dudes, and so he gets even more upset, and Negan has to tell him, like, cool it. We're not killing everybody, even though I know you want to. Maybe we will later, but right now this is not the move to make, and so he's, you know, reeling him in. Anyway, the next one we get is Enid. Who the fuck is that? Oh, yeah. It's that sullen chick that was from, you know, it was like kind of flirting with Coral. So no one remembers what happened to them. I don't remember what happened to them. She's with the gay guy and they're getting busted by the Isle of Lesbos, those chicks. Apparently, she killed a grandmother. I really don't remember what happened. They should have recapped that a little bit better. Enid convinces Moana, I'm calling her Moana, she's like the leader of the Lesbos, to let them go. It's real easy to convince her, which was pretty lame. And yeah, she went from, let's just kill him, take him out to the beach and kill him, to, okay, you guys can just go. The gay guy, so they're sort of free. They're, you know, the Lesbos are saying, like, don't come back. Gay says he wants to stay behind and figure out how to get them to fight with them, which I feel like he could do. He's a very unthreatening type of person in this character in this show. So I feel like if anybody was going to stay behind and do that, that would be him. However, splitting up is never the way to go. And the last shot we see of him is like, you go ahead, like, I'll stay back and figure out what to do. And then he just kind of goes halfway behind a tree and squats, which I thought was pretty funny. Okay. So he's going to do something. Who knows? Then we get to Simon, who's Westworld. Westworld's going to the garbage town, and we realize that this is before Rick and Michonne have gotten there in the previous scenes. Let's see. Oh, he's really trying to hold it in. You know, they're kind of pushing up against him, and he's trying to deliver the message that Negan wants to deliver, which is, you know, just give us all your guns and we'll just kill one of you to keep you in line and we'll move on. But they are pushing him a little bit and he's, you know, yelling at them, and he ends up actually killing all of them except for the main lady, which her name is Jadis, it turns out. Yeah, so he kills everybody. He's freaking out. Oh, but before he does that, he mentions a helipad and solar panels. What's that about? We never knew that before. That's pretty exciting because there is that strange helicopter that we see going around every once in a while. So it might be interesting to see. Maybe this garbage dump front is really hiding a helipad and solar panels and like a farm and I don't know, all kinds of stuff. So Westworld guy is killing everybody. Light it up, he says. He's coming back home. The next scene is that he's driving home, sees Negan. Negan's like, hey, how did it go? And he's like, good, yeah, it's good. Just did what you said. He doesn't tell him. Then we go to Jadis. Jadis is the garbage person. Rick and Michonne. Oh, so we're back at Rick and Michonne sort of getting jumped by all the zombies and trying to escape. They're escaping from them. They see Jadis sort of on top of this hill of garbage. And hey, she's speaking like a normal person. What a surprise. That whole thing was an act. It's weird that they all decided to do that and that they were all on the same page with we talk like, I can't even do it. Like there were no prepositions and no articles in their sentences. They were real weird. I don't know why they chose to do that, but maybe that will come into play later with them hiding some sort of technology and resources. So what I thought of at this point was, why didn't the Westworld guy kill Jadis? If he was going to kill everyone and wipe everybody out, why would he leave the leader? I don't understand. Anyway, so Rick tells her it's her fault that all of her people are now zombies. And I'm thinking, dude, she's got solar panels and a helicopter, maybe. You're really not aligning yourself with the right people. And I mean, to his credit, he doesn't have a lot of faith in her. But doesn't he see that he's also been through things like this where like all of your people, not all of his people, but a ton of his people have either been killed or are in danger and you kind of change your tune a little bit? Like he should be able to see her at this point as a person who, and she's speaking normally, like he should have maybe humanized her a little bit and been a little bit nicer to her. Anyway, he's a real jerk to her, tells her it's her fault. Now that will come in later. She wants to get out. He doesn't let her. Oh, and then she leads us and the zombies to this trash compactor. And it was interesting earlier, she said, we are the paint. She realized that the world was the canvas and that her people and all of us were the paint. And now she's literally grinding up her former friends, now zombies, and they're splattering onto the canvas of this place. Now she really literally is the paint. Interesting. Anyway, she takes a little nap. She's feeling refreshed in her beautiful white gown. She wakes up. She goes, finds an applesauce in a can. She eats it. It's very nice. We'll see what happens with her. Then we go back to Rick. It's Rick and Michonne. And they're driving. It feels guilty for leaving her. he's talking to Michonne about how he kind of feels guilty for leaving her, like why he left her. I shot above her head so that she got out. Don't worry, she got out. Michonne is telling Rick that this is what Coral was trying to say, to bring peace. Like, he should have seen that this was a time when, you know, she has nothing. She's broken down to her core. Now, this is someone that we should align with and help because she has nothing and we have way more than her and we should bring her with us. He's thinking about it. He stops and he starts to read some of the letters from Coral. And he starts with Negan's letter, which is strange. Why wouldn't he read the letter to himself? I don't know. So Rick radios Negan. Coral's dead. Coral wanted peace. But Rick says, my dead son's dying wish was for us to have peace. But fuck that. Ain't no peace. I'm gonna kill you. And Negan is being so nice. He had plans. Okay, well, this part doesn't sound that nice, but he's disappointed. I mean, maybe he had some fucked up plans, just like Rick has fucked up plans, but he said, I had plans for Coral, you know, like I wanted Coral to be a part of this. He was our future. And Rick is listening, but he's still so hell bent on revenge that he can't see the forest for the trees, which is really frustrating to see. Oh, Rick has explained to you what happened, you know, that he didn't die by, you know, the grenades and the fire or anything. It was that he was bit. Negan feels bad. Negan says that Coral's the future. Rick says the only future is one where you're dead. Like, get out of here, Rick. And then Negan says to Rick, the only reason why Coral is dead is because of you. This is the same thing that Rick said to Jadis, the garbage lady. This is very important. Rick hates Negan because he feels like Negan is a monster. Rick is also a monster. Hello, Rick. He also says something about that garbage sticks with you. Give up, you failed. And I thought that maybe that when he says that garbage sticks, I'm sorry, Negan says that the garbage sticks with you. I didn't know if that was some sort of reference to the garbage lady. But listen, Rick, you said that to Jadis. Negan is saying that to you. Now, this is where this show, it gets a little frustrating. I liked this episode. I know I make fun of it a little bit because it's fun to sort of make fun of it because there are some problems. However, this is the problem with this show. Rick is supposed to be our guy. We're following Rick around. I'm not supposed to like the bad guy more than Rick. Rick has too many flaws, not enough good attributes. He makes long, vengeful plans that don't seem to benefit anyone but his sort of retaliatory mindset. And that's not fun to watch. Like I said, even though Negan is a monster, his decisions make sense. Rick's decisions do not make sense. Your fucking kid, Coral, died and is asking for peace. Garbage Jadis gives you a little glimpse, a glimmer of hope for peace between you two. You fuck that up. Negan is giving you honest human emotion from what you deem as a monster. And again, you're like, you're gonna die. This is not... I'm losing interest in you, Rick. Why would I? Now I don't want Michonne to stick with you. Michonne, girl, get you somebody else. This is why I'm annoyed with the show. However, like I said, this episode was actually pretty interesting and good. There wasn't a lot of bullshit, like heartstring pulling for no other reason to just pull your heartstring. It didn't, you know, there were a lot of times in this show, they do a lot of, you know, manipulation like that just for manipulation's sake and don't push the story along. However, I think that a lot of things in this episode pushed the story along, and that's really all we need. And we also need a little bit better character development for Poirot. And that's a recap of this garbage show that I'm hate watching. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next week, radios.
All right. Do you have a staff pick this week?
I do have a couple.
All right. Let's hear them.
I'm going for full Canadian this week.
All right.
On Netflix, new movie called Ravenous. It's a French Canadian movie. It stars Marc-André Graudon. He was Xavier Laflamme in the Goon movies. the star hockey player in the you never seen Goon?
No.
If you like hockey. It's Sean.
What if you don't like hockey?
You probably would still like it.
Okay.
But it's a hockey. He was in that. It's kind of a zombie slash The Crazies kind of movie. Small French Canadian town. People are turning on themselves, and there's a small group of people that aren't affected, and they're trying to get away.
All right.
Kind of a stock storyline, but the way it looks and the way they've made it kind of puts a new spin on it. Also, on the 30th of this month, the 12th season of Trailer Park Boys comes out on Netflix.
How long has it been since the last season? A couple years, right?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years. This will be the last season with John Dunsworth. They finished all of it, got it in the can, and then he passed in October. So this will be the last time to see Leahy.
See, this is a show that's been on for so long that I've never watched.
Yeah.
And I know that people love it, and I feel like I'm an idiot for never having gotten into it. Not that I wouldn't. I watched a couple episodes, and it was hilarious.
It's definitely one of those one that you put on. Like, at my house, I'll literally come home from work, and I'll just put on a season, and it'll just play.
Right.
And you've seen all of them so many times, and it's funny because you've seen the production quality from the first season to they're on Netflix now. It's ridiculous, the scope. I mean, talk about Clerks was bare bones. I mean, this was also bare bones. Wasn't a convenience store. It was just a trailer park.
Right.
But
that's what I used to do with South Park. I'd come home and I think I'll watch season 5. And put them all on, and of course, I don't do that now.
it's just good background. And I love Canadian humor.
Mm-hmm.
It just cracks me up.
Is Netflix putting all of them to watch, or just the latest season?
No, they've got one. Yeah, they've got 1 through 11 on there now, and then they'll drop the entire season at one time.
Right.
And lastly, I've brought it up online before, but just wanted to say it on the show. Letterkenny. If you've ever seen Letterkenny, it's a show about different cliques in a small town in Canada, where you have the Hicks, the rave goth kids. You've got the hockey guys, and the Christians.
Okay,
you know, those are the dynamic of the town. And it's basically, if you like busting balls like hockey players do, this is nothing but that for 25 minutes.
Okay.
Really funny stuff. It's up for three of the Canadian Emmys, you know, that are coming out. The Kimmies. Jared Kiso is the main character. He's up for best comedic actor, also up for best writing of the series, and the series is up for best show. So it's won the last 2 years. So it's on the Crave TV.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's hard to find.
It is in the States.
I have that with my Roku.
But if you can find it on there, it's excellent. They've done 4 seasons, 6 show seasons,
right.
And actually they do everything through the government there. You know, as far as the so they actually ordered a total of 40 more episodes.
Do you know, I was listening to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal podcast. This week's guest was Dave Thomas. Have you listened yet?
No, I downloaded it. I gotta get it.
And they finally get to talking to him about there's a lot of Bob Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just do my staff picks. Are you finished? Because I don't want to.
Yeah, that was good.
No. I don't want to.
No, that was it.
Okay. My staff picks are 2 podcasts. That one I just mentioned. And I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, you're fine.
I feel terrible now, and you're going to hate me forever, and you're not going to listen.
You're such an asshole.
They talk about the great Bob Hope impression that he did, and that came from reverence and him loving Bob Hope, and how Bob Hope came to love that impression of him, and they became friends, and all the stuff I didn't know about Dave Thomas, which I've always liked the guy.
Yeah.
But I've always liked SCTV.
How he founded Wendy's.
Yes, but the reason I thought about it is you come up with Doug and Bob? Mm-hmm. Is that what Bob and Doug McKenzie?
Bob and Doug McKenzie. Right.
And he tells a story about Canadians. The CBC has rules for Canadian content, and the reason that they came up with that is because in the United States, the syndicated version had more commercials, and they had 2 extra minutes in the Canadian version, and they're like, we don't want to do this bullshit. So they wrote it to be super offensive about Canadians and submitted it, and they said, this is great. So it caught on, and it became the biggest thing that they ever did, and then they made the movie, and there's a lot of great stuff about on the podcast about how they got Mel Blanc. And so check it out if you're a fan of Dave Thomas, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal podcast. And my other staff pick is the Phil Hendry podcast on the Podcast One Network. And I talk about it all the time, but the episode he put out today, I'm just going to read you the description. It features a character he does named Kenny Slagg, and Kenny Slagg is recording the principles of abundance in the 21st century. And Kenny has to work with his pitch and the fact that he's committed another lewd act while also attacking a family with an axe and sexually assaulting a woman at a fancy hotel. Now, the reason I'm recommending it is because it's 40 minutes of the most confusing and entertainingly funny things you'll ever hear in your life. It's this guy trying to record a voiceover, and then Phil doing seven different voices, doing the engineer, doing the... And it's just fucking incredible. And if you like voice stuff and comedy that's no holds barred, listen to Phil Hendry's podcast, because, first of all, he hosts it, and then he does Bud Dickman, who's the producer, and he does General Galen Shaw, who is a sidekick, and then he does Margaret Gray. And these are all characters he did back in the old radio show when he would fool people. But he's just, they all live in his head, and he can have these conversations with himself that are amazing. And I wish I could do that. And I would never try to do it because you can't top it.
Yeah.
Right.
Not live, especially not live.
And also, check out The Tick. Superior. You watching The Tick?
I watched the first two.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new season.
I love it. He goes in there and it's Jackie Earl Haley and he's talking. Have you watched it, Jeff?
Nah, I got to watch the new one.
Oh, that new season. That show is so well done and so underappreciated.
Yeah, the guy doing The Tick is awesome.
Yeah, he's great. I've never seen that guy before.
Have you seen Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah.
He's the Pete. He's the roommate.
That's in the shower.
Yeah. Yeah, that's him.
Holy shit. I didn't know that. The girl was on that awful Kevin Bacon show.
And actually, he was also the voice of Darth Maul.
Really?
In Phantom Menace.
I did not know that either. Yeah. But yeah, the girl, do you remember that show with Kevin Bacon and the guy with the big dick?
I love dick.
No, the guy with the big dick.
The Falling?
The Fall.
Yeah, or The Fall.
The
yeah.
Following.
Oh, The Following.
There's so many.
Well, that girl that was on that show who was in love with the big dick actor, whose name I can't remember.
Milton Berle?
No. Yeah, Milton
Berle. I don't know who you're talking about.
You do. He's on that show that I watched. He's on Altered Carbon, that guy.
James Purefoy?
Yeah.
Yeah, the new RoboCop.
Yeah, the new RoboCop. Who's also Mark Antony on Rome, which is a very underrated and underappreciated show.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was fantastic. Now one of the main guys is on that awful Doctor show. Okay, Jeff, go ahead.
Mine is Love, the third and final season that starts on the 9th on Netflix.
Isn't that show with a lot of N?
There's not a lot of N on it. It's Gillian Jacobs and Paul Rust.
Uh-huh.
And a really funny cast of people. And it's just about like their relationship and they're on again, off again. It's really good. This is the final season. So hopefully they'll wrap the story up in a nice little bow.
Cool. Dustin?
Yes.
Anything you'd like to plug?
If any of the radios out there want to come and join the Radio Shack on Facebook, please do. It's mostly... I think all the Patreons are there.
I don't know what has, since we hit 1,000 likes on Facebook, Radio Labyrinth, I don't know if the metric changed or something, but we're getting so many notifications now about, like, people followed the page, people liked the page.
Yeah.
It seems like just recently since.
I did a blast to all my followers recently.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
Well, I don't do it where you mail to everybody. I find that to be intrusive. So I find people that I think might say yes.
Oh, and then just you. So you pick.
I do a manual.
Cherry pick it.
Yeah, cherry pick it. And a lot of people that I've worked with in the past, some people in the family and old friends and stuff.
Yeah, the Radio Shack just hit 100. So we're not at 1,000. We're just a little over 100.
We'll promote it. Go to the Radio Shack.
But yeah, usually I try to throw in things referenced on the show and, you know, any of the pictures that you guys talk about and stuff that I send you guys, I usually will put on there too.
Right.
We'll put them on anytime you like. And, I would love to have you back on the show. So
sure.
Anytime you'd like to come in, we'll have you because this was fun. And I'm sure there's lots more we could talk about with Kevin Smith, but we got to wrap it up. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, get well soon, Kevin. And
Yeah, man. I hope you listen to this, even though we know you won't. But that's cool.
He said he's been a vegetarian for like a week now.
His poop must be better.
He's still eating eggs, he said, but he's not really into eggs.
Yeah, so he's a vegan mostly, plus eggs.
Yeah, plus eggs.
But you got to have a protein, and you get a lot of protein from eggs. Right. Eggs aren't bad for you. So.
You can't just eat nuts.
He hasn't, at least as far as I've heard, he hasn't smoked weed since he had a heart attack. But he said if he gets the desire to, he's going to vape.
Better idea. Oh, yeah. Of course, we don't do that here in Georgia.
It's illegal.
Dustin, thanks again, man.
Hey, no problem.
Pleasure meeting you. And again, you're welcome to come back. And thank you for running the radio page.
No problem.
The Radio Shack. Jeff, you got anything?
I got nothing to plug.
All right. Steph will be back next week, and so will Autumn.
And I think Ira's back soon.
Fucking
Ira.
Fucking Ira. We got a new Ira. No, just kidding, Ira. Love you. All right, until next week, remember to
keep it canon.
Two Faces Radio.